And good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. I have the pleasure of introducing Master Gardener Teresa Rooney, answering those lawn and garden questions this morning. Hi, Teresa.
Hello, Denny. Hello, everyone.
A beautiful Saturday morning. It's gorgeous. We expect some showers tomorrow and maybe on Memorial Day as well. We'll talk about that as we move through the hour. But if you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, call it in or text it in. There's just one number to remember for either a phone call or a text, and that number is 651-461-9226. Already we have a bunch of texts coming in, Teresa. Wanted to ask you, our overnight lows were in the, last night, generally speaking, were in the upper 40s. Could that have hurt anything that we planted already?
Probably not. Some of your tropicals, probably, they might not have preferred it, but hopefully they were well-watered from all the rain we had, and they should have been all fine. Even tropicals can handle those upper 40s. They don't like it, but they don't get frosted or anything, so we should be okay with everything.
Good news. Looking at a text that says, good morning, I've got some onions planted, and I wanted to mulch them with shredded leaves. That I've done it once before, and it seemed like it hindered the growth of the onions themselves. Now, should I mulch those onions, or should I just leave them be and just keep weeding by hand?
You can mulch them. Just make sure that the mulch is not shading the soil right above where you want that onion bulb to be. So hopefully you planted them far enough apart. So you're going to have like little holes in your mulch, if that makes any sense. Don't mulch right up to the onion stems.
Okay. Let's see. Can you think of a, this is the text now, can you think of a tree genus that we don't plant enough, a tree that we don't value, but perhaps we should? There's an interesting question.
That's a very interesting question. Offhand, I can't think of any. I would think, look at those native trees. Service berries, I think we could always plant more of. But that's just me wanting service berries everywhere in the world. But offhand, I can't think of any. I would suggest people obviously steer away from ash right now and perhaps steer away from the maples. Maybe look at some of the native trees that we have. And the Extension website would have some really good information. So would the DNR website. They would have some really good information that would be particular to your zone.
That's a great point for either one, but especially we always like to mention the university's website, extension.umn.edu. I've learned a lot from that, especially looking for either trees or shrubs or tomatoes or whatever the case may be. We'll mention that from time to time.
And just plan extra time, because once you get in there, you'll suddenly see something, and then right. You'll go down that little rabbit hole, and you go down that little rabbit hole, and let somebody else cook dinner for you.
There you go. Great idea. Let's take a phone call this morning. I believe Diane is calling in from Minneapolis. Diane, hi. What is your question for Teresa?
Hi, good morning. I'm going to be mulching around some maple trees today, and I wanted to find out if it was safe to put the newspaper under the mulch for weed control, or if I would be causing damage to the tree roots.
Diane, that's a really good question, and thank you for asking it. It's fine to put the newspaper down. What I would do is make sure that the topsoil is nice and moist. Then put your newspaper down and get that wet also, and then put your mulch on top of that so that you have that nice moist layer, layers going all the way through. Make sure when you mulch a tree that the mulch never touches the trunk of the tree. Maybe pull it back about 6 inches so you have just that little bare area around the tree. And you just want to put down 2-3 inches of mulch would be just fine. You don't want to go a lot deeper than that. Good luck, Diane.
Teresa, looking at this question, simply put, they're talking about eggshells. They were really questioning the value of it, what they read, he or she is reading about that. Let's see, they were looking at a blog by a chemist who said that the calcium in eggshells is the wrong form and cannot be used by plants in the garden. I could see value in deterring slugs, but they are not a problem to me. Can you shed some light? What about eggshells in the garden, generally speaking?
So I'm not 100% sure about the different kinds of calcium. I don't know. I'm not a scientist, so I couldn't speak to that. But our soils have plenty of calcium here in Minnesota. We have plenty of calcium for the plants' needs. Putting crushed eggshells into your garden is not going to hurt anything. It may not help anything so much, but it's not going to hurt. And they take so long to decompose. Now, if you're looking to prevent blossom end rot, your watering practices are more important and your fertilizing practices are more important than adding eggshells or anything else that has calcium into the soil. So if that, look into that. But yeah, it's not going to hurt anything. It's a nice way to just keep the eggshells out of the landfills and put them in there. It adds a little bit of grit to the garden and it should be just fine. But I can't say it's really going to help our plants any.
Very good. Back to the phones we go. Marie, next up here, calling in from Woodbury. Marie, good morning. What is your question?
Good morning. I have a clematis that's at least 10 years old, and the leaves are turning yellow, and some of the leaves from the tip to about halfway are turning brown.
Okay, so what you want to do, Marie, is make sure that your clematis hasn't been broken, the stems or the stems haven't been broken. Lots of times the squirrels running around or chipmunks or even us brushing against those stems can break them because they're very, very brittle. That would be my first guess. If the clematis has not had this before, I wouldn't worry. You probably aren't seeing clematis wilt, but I would keep an eye on it. Check for those broken stems. And you may just want to go to the extension website and look at clematis and look at clematis wilt, W-I-L-T, just to make sure that those aren't the signs you're seeing. It'll talk about how you could maybe do some Bordeaux or something like that, not the wine, but a Bordeaux mix that could help the clematis wilt. That may be one option. I would definitely, though, do some research first on clematis wilt, but I'm thinking something just got damaged in some of these high winds or with squirrels running around or something.
All right. Tell you what, let's grab another phone call before we take a quick break. Dan is calling in from Clear Lake, I believe, this morning. Hi, Dan. What's your question?
Good morning, Denny, Teresa. Happy Memorial Day weekend.
And to you.
Over the last few years, a little fruit or trees planted to include pears, plums, apples, apricots, and cherries for the following. Number one.
I tell you what, Dan, I'm going to have the ask start all over again. Your phone has been breaking up, so why don't we back up and I'll just say, hey, Dan, what's your question? And you can start all over.
Good morning, Denny. Thank you. Over the last few years, I've kind of planted a fruit orchard with pears, plums, peaches, apples, apricots, and cherries. The following questions are these. When and if should I fertilize, number one? Number two, is it recommended to spray for insects, and when and if? And then number three, because of the bountiful rainfall we've had, I've had a tremendous blooming on all the trees, and some of the trees are young. Is it ever recommended to take and remove some of the fruit before maturity so as to not damage the trees? Thank you, Denny. Thank you, Teresa.
Thanks, Dan.
Dan, those are absolutely fantastic questions. First of all, fertilizing your trees should be fine in the soil they're in. If you want to top dress with a fertilizer, you can. If your trees are looking happy, which they sound like they are, I wouldn't worry about it. The trees will find their own nutrition in the soil. The roots can head out and find nutrition that way. You don't want to spray for insects unless you know why you're spraying and what you're spraying for. So you first of all have to have a problem with insects or know that every year you have a problem with a certain insect, and then you look for the tree spray that's going to work for that and you spray it out according to the label instructions. Read the label and always follow the label. It's the law. And the blooms, yes, you do want to cull some of that fruit. You do want to take some of that fruit off because you don't want the weight of the fruit to break the branches. You also don't want the tree may be able to produce 18 bushels of apples, but they'll all be little. But if you can back that off to 14 bushels or 12 bushels, you'll get bigger, healthier apples, and the tree can actually sustain the weight. And next year, it will still have energy to go into the flower and fruit the next year. So, and apples are one of those trees that can easily overproduce one year and not produce the next year. So if you can even out those productions, so yes, you do need to take some of that fruit off. And then again, in June, you will get what's called windfalls, where the fruit just obviously just aborts and falls on the ground. Just clean that up really well. Good luck with your orchard, Dan. It sounds exciting.
Very good. Let's take this quick break. Be right back with more of our Smart Garden Show. If you're just joining us, Master Gardener Teresa Rooney answering those lawn and garden questions this morning here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Stay with us. And good Saturday morning to you on this holiday weekend. Denny Long back with Master Gardener Teresa Rooney on our Smart Garden Show. We are here, by the way, every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, welcoming your lawn and garden questions. Teresa, we have tons of questions, of course, text-wise, and we're going to get back to those. But I believe Jim is hanging on the phone there, calling in from Belle Plaine there this morning. Hi, Jim. Thanks for waiting. What's your question, please? Hello, Jim. I know he's there. I can hear you, Jim. Let's hear your question. Okay. I'll tell you what, Dennis. Jim, maybe he went out for coffee, but we'll check back. But in the meantime, we have so many text questions. Let's get to them.
Okay.
The question, is it too late, this texter says, this season, to transplant a rhubarb plant? And do I cut back the plants and leaves?
If you need to transplant it because you have to move it in for construction or to get more sun, dig up as much of the roots as you can. They're pretty shallow rooted. And just put it, have the hole already dug with some nice organic soil and compost to go back into it. Organic rich soil, and replant it right away at the same depth it was. It may show a little bit of wilt, but then it should come back just fine. Give it a good drink of water. So, yep, go ahead and do that as quickly as you can before the heat sets in.
All right. Another text says this, can I spray weed killer on my thistles that are growing under my pine trees, or will that hurt the pine trees?
It depends. You have to read the label of the weed killer to make sure that it says it can be used under trees, especially under pine trees because they're such shallow rooted trees. So make sure you read it and it says that it can use it over tree roots. There are some chemicals out there that move through the soil and can impact your tree. So you may just want to keep cutting them at ground level till you totally make them use up all their root energy and then die if you don't have the right kind of weed killer. But read the label.
Okay, always read the label.
Always, and you have to follow it. It's the law.
Very good. How to get rid of garlic mustard, which is partnered with a catchweed and taken over a large area. Thank you. They are driving me nuts.
Thank you for wanting to get rid of garlic. Mustard is one of our invasive plants that we do want to get rid of. It is a biennial, and you definitely don't want it to go to seed. So just pull up as much as you possibly can. That's the easiest. And yes, I know it's a big area, but do what you can with it. And if you can't pull up everything, at least pull off all the flowers that you see so it can't go to seed, and then work on it all season long and just, you know, pull up a 5x5 section every weekend or something like that. But don't let it go to seed, otherwise you're really going to be impacting how much you get the following year. So I would just suggest pulling it up is the easiest thing to do.
Let's go, grab a phone call. Al, I believe, is calling in from Plymouth this morning. Hi, Al. What is your question?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I put 10-10-10 fertilized down in April on all the shrubs, and I'm wondering if I should be doing that again in June or July.
You know, for the most part, Al, your shrubs should be happy with just the one application in the spring. If you notice that something's flagging, something's not doing really well, try to figure out why it's not doing really well. Do you have like a mulch that's too close to it? Is it not getting too much water, not enough, too much? And if those aren't the issues, then you can just gently maybe top dress with some compost around those shrubs. But once a year should be just fine for the shrubs. They have a big enough root system where they can go out and find their nutrition that they need.
All right. Another texter says this: my birch saplings, the leaves were fine until a few weeks after they opened. Now they have gold, quote, bubbles on them. Is this an insect or a fungus? And can you recommend a product to use? This is near a pond and a marsh.
Okay. What you're looking at probably are a gall, G-A-L-L, and that it is an insect, but there's a little insect that either laid an egg in there and then the insect will hatch and it will fall or fly away. It's not going to hurt your birch trees. Or it could just be that something was feeding there and it's just like how we get a reaction to a mosquito bite. We sometimes get a little lump there. It's not going to hurt your birch. You should be just fine. Sometimes a few leaves may get so many galls on them that they kind of twist and curl. But if the majority of the leaves look like they're still photosynthesizing and they have galls on them, it's absolutely no problem at all.
Okay. Now let's go back to the phone. I believe Jim in Belle Plaine is ready with a question. Hi, Jim. What is your question?
Good morning. I have two questions, actually. I have a question about alpine columbine. It's a blue flower. It seems to be acts like a ground cover and wants to take over. And then secondly, my question is, I want to plant an alpine currant bush hedge. And how far apart should I place the plants?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jim, for your questions. I'm not familiar with alpine, the first one that you had, the alpine columbine. I'm not familiar with that one. So I'd have to read up on that one for you. But go to the extension website. Perhaps they have something. I've not heard of that. The alpine currants, they should say on the tags that the plants will get, I think it's 3 to 4 feet wide. So that means you would want to plant them about 3 to 4 feet apart so that when the two sides came together, they would meet. You could plant them a little bit closer. Alpine currant can sometimes get a powdery mildew if it's too tight. So just make sure it's going to be in full sun and just plant them whatever size it says it gets that wide. Just plant them about that far apart, if that makes any sense to you. And if whatever size it says it gets that wide, just plant them about that far apart, if that makes any sense to you. And eventually they'll grow together. If that seems too, you have teeny tiny plants and that seems too small, you can maybe plant some annuals between them for right now, or maybe even some perennial grasses, and then in 2 or 3 years move the perennial grasses. It'll give you that hedge appearance. It'll just look like every other plant, the alpine currant and grass and alpine currant and grass, but the grass will give you some hedge-like look until that currants can fill in. That would be my best guess for you there, or a suggestion.
Teresa, before we break for weather, let me grab another text question. This listener would like to dig up tulip bulbs. Do I need to leave them in the ground a little longer before digging them out?
Okay, I'm not sure why you're digging them out, but I would leave them in the ground as long as you can to photosynthesize, unless you're going to be planting them immediately somewhere else, and then they can continue photosynthesizing. But if you can leave them in the ground till the leaves start to brown up or yellow, and then move them, that would be the best, so that they get all the energy for next year. So if you want flowers next year, you want them to be as big and healthy as possible. So you want them to get all the energy they can before you move them.
Very good. Let's do this. Let's break and see what this holiday forecast looks like. And then we'll be back with more of our Smart Garden Show here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, Master Gardener Teresa Rooney answering all of those lawn and garden questions this morning. And we always like to mention at this point, Teresa, to get, and what a weekend to get to the Arboretum.
Oh, get to the Arboretum. There's a lot of stuff going on out there. There's a lot of flowers in bloom. Azaleas and alliums, irises, peonies, lupins, lilacs. There's just so much to do, and they have plant walks. So go out to the Arboretum, drive 3 Mile Drive, check out all the mazes and the exciting art that they have out there. There's just, it's a jewel, and we're so lucky to have it here. So, and if you just want to learn about flowers and what they look like when they're growing and how to maybe to arrange them in a garden, you'll get some great ideas from the Arboretum.
Yeah, it's a great, if nothing else, it's a great walk. Just a beautiful walk.
And it's going to be beautiful today, so get out there and enjoy it and just have some fun.
Make reservations online, however. Keep that in mind.
Yep, always and, make a reservation. That means you get good parking, right, Denny?
Absolutely. Makes it very efficient. Get to the Arboretum. All right. Texter says about red buds. I'm not sure what that is. We want an ornamental tree on the southwest corner of our house. Can we keep a red bud small enough if we plant it 8 feet from the house?
You probably could, although they do want to be much bigger, they want to be a 20-foot tree, so that would that you'd have to be pruning it pretty rigorously. I'd also worry that that might be a little too hot for it. Red buds might like a little protection. They don't mind full sun, but that southwest corner is going to get really hot, especially in the winter. The buds may come out too early, and you may not see the red bud. May I suggest something like a service berry or something like that that you can prune very easily. It'll give you some flowers in the spring, although they'll be white, not the pink of the red bud. Maybe find a better place for your red bud so you can still enjoy a red bud. But I would probably lean more toward a small service berry than a red bud in that situation.
This next question, if you can answer, I know you can answer that, and if you can find a way, you can retire. Is there any way to deter rabbits other than hardware cloth?
Yes. There are some ways. So you want to think when you have critters that are bothering, maybe instead of just relying on one thing, rely on a few different things. So fencing is the easiest and most efficient way to do it. You can use things like repellents that will act on a fragrance, maybe rotten eggs or garlic or something like that, or a very chemical smell that they just make unpalatable for rabbits. You could use something like that. Understand if you use that, you're going to need to change it up, say, every 2 to 3 to 4 weeks, and you may need to reapply it during that time because of the heat or the rain that we get. You just want to keep the rabbits so that they don't like that area. Be out there more often. If you have a dog, sometimes that helps, although I had a dog who thought rabbits were funny kitties, and he liked the rabbits and wouldn't chase them because he liked his kitty cats. So those are some options that you may try, but usually the physical barriers work the best, and once you can just understand that the physical barrier is there and it's really helping you, maybe you can see in a different light.
I was thinking, so many years ago, 20, 25 years ago, maybe more, we used to do shows with a gentleman by the name of Harold Bailey. He was a friendly trapper.
Oh.
And he had all these homegrown solutions to, he would say, like, for rabbits, rabbits don't like bacon grease, and they eat at a 45-degree angle, so go spray your plants with bacon grease.
Oh, I bet the raccoons love those plants then.
That's the trade-off from one critter to another. All right, Teresa, here's another question. Are Japanese beetles mostly in the metro area?
I think you're going to find them concentrated there because we have a lot more lawns that we are grooming, and we have a lot more golf courses and places that we're grooming really well with big swaths of grass. And it's just a wonderful place for them to lay their eggs. And we have all these beautiful ornamental plants, so it's a wonderful place for them to eat. You will find them in other spots, but you'll probably find them more. You won't find them out in the country that much, like in the woods, because that they're just not going to lay their eggs out there, and there's nothing for them really to eat. So I think your caller or your person is right, probably more in settled areas.
Okay. This listener, Teresa, says we have a flowering crabapple tree this year. It dropped a lot of leaves, and they're part green and part brown and black. Is this apple rust? And is there anything we can do about it?
It's not apple rust, and my brain just missed what it was. It's hidden in the files in my memory. it's something that a lot of crabapples are susceptible to. Having obviously problems this morning, no coffee. So I would go to the extension website, and probably later on in the forecast I'll shout something out because I'll remember what it's called. But go to the extension website and ask what's wrong with my crabapple. Just clean up really well. It's a fungal disease. Just clean up really well. Get those leaves off the ground. And then if you keep seeing it every year, you may need to do a preventative spray. But it's not cedar apple rust. It's something else. And I'll figure it out.
Well, you can just jump in, and we can backtrack if you think of something. It happens. This listener, Teresa, says, I'm working in a flower bed to eliminate creeping bellflower, and It is intermixed with my two dwarf iris. I don't want to harm the iris. What's the best route for me to take in this project?
You know, until you can get what I would do, if you can, just chop it off at ground level in amongst those irises, and then in August, pull those irises all up, dig down, take out the creeping alley bellflower roots that you find, and then replant your irises. That's what I would do, especially in that area. The rest of the area, you can, if you want to, you know, pull it up, dig it up. Those roots go way down. They have big, huge reservoirs of carbohydrates in their stores, and so they'll just keep coming back. I can't dig up my whole yard, so I just keep pulling it as I see it, knowing that I am not destroying the plant, but I'm hoping just to weaken its reserves enough so it finally just gives up and dies.
Speaking of irises, this question is, why don't my irises bloom? The plants are healthy and get good water and sun.
I was going to say the sun would be the best. Make sure that they're not too crowded. When irises or daylilies get too crowded, they tend to stop blooming. So maybe in August, lift up those irises and spread them apart to take away any of the bad stuff, and make sure the daughters or the corms are facing outward, so that they're moving away from each other as they grow, and you won't have to pull them and redo them every few years. That would be easiest. But I'm thinking they're probably just tight in there then.
Okay. This listener wants to know if you have any ideas on how to get rid of snow on the mountain. It's so invasive.
It is invasive. Again, I would pull it and dig it where you can. If you must resort to a chemical, just make sure that it is an herbicide that will take out snow on the mountain, and be careful when you're spraying it, because that herbicide will also kill things like your... It is an herbicide that will take out snow on the mountain, and be careful when you're spraying it, because that herbicide will also kill things like your roses or any of your ornamental flowers or anything like that. But for all of these weeds, pulling it and just being really persistent and maybe mulching the area will slow it down from coming back, and just keep pulling it and or pull and dig to remove as much as you can, and just be really cognizant that it may come back from the little bits of roots that you have left in the ground.
Okay. A couple of questions actually this morning about, can you speak to the viburnum leaf beetle treatment? I don't see anything on the extension website. And actually, we've had a couple of questions about that particular issue. Any answers?
I don't have any answers. It's in the back of my mind that I need to research it, and obviously I should have brought it a little forward and researched it a little bit earlier. I know it can be getting to be a problem, but again, for a lot of these things, unless it's defoliating your whole plants, it's usually not a big problem, but you can look. As you said, the extension website doesn't have any information. But they will eventually on that, I'm sure. But I just haven't researched it yet, so I can't give you any good information. I'm really sorry about that.
Can I plant tulip bulbs now? Listener wants to know.
Well, you can. You're not going to find them in the store. And if you're thinking that you got a beautiful container with forced tulips and you want to put those bulbs in the ground, you can go ahead and put them in the ground. They probably won't do anything. They will probably die because they didn't get enough photosynthesizing and they were forced, so they were stressed, and they may not come back for you. But, I mean, it's better than trying to hold them over till fall when you need to plant them. So I would try to get them in the ground as fast as you can. Understand it's not guaranteed much of a success for you.
Okay. We need to take a quick break.
Okay.
So hang on. Master Gardener Teresa Runa answering lawn and garden questions for you this hour. Coming along next hour, right after the 9 o'clock news break, Andy Lindis will be fielding any kind of a home improvement question you might ask. That's next hour here on News Talk 830 WCCO. And a good Saturday morning to you on this holiday weekend. Denny Long back with Master Gardener Teresa Runa on this Smart Garden Show.
Teresa, I have some information. Okay.
I'm ready.
Apple scab is what I was thinking of for the crab apple. So it's apple scab is why your plant is dropping its leaves. So research apple scab on the website. And then the leaf beetles, the Wisconsin University of Madison has a good article on leaf beetles. So viburnum leaf beetles, Wisconsin, and you should be able to find it really good. And it tells you how to take care of it and what you can see.
Very good. Thanks for doing
it's
a little homework there.
It's too late to treat it right now.
Too late.
I think so.
All right, let's see. Thanks for that, Teresa. Let's see how many folks we're going to help out before you take your leave. This listener wants to move several large June hostas to the north side of the house, which has more shade and where ground stays damp longer. Will the hostas thrive there is the question.
They might. If the ground is a heavy clay, I would plant them a little bit higher. If it stays moist a long time, definitely plant them a little bit higher. You don't want them to get crown rot. Go ahead, move them as quickly as you can. They'll look a little tattered this year, but they'll recover, and once they start growing again, they'll be just beautiful.
Here's a question we used to get every show, but haven't for a while. Is there any way to get rid of Creeping Charlie from my lawn?
I have been, I'd get off the, and I'd be crying. Nobody asked about Creeping Charlie. It was terrible. Creeping Charlie, pull it, keep pulling it, raking it out of your beds, and then just be really vigilant about it. Definitely don't let it go to seed if it's in an area where you're okay with it growing. As soon as those flowers start to fade, cut them off, mow it. That's the easiest way. There are chemicals you can use. You will have to do them in the spring and the fall. You may have some repeat applications. Fall would be the best time to use those chemicals on Creeping Charlie. Late summer, early fall is what I'm talking about, but read and understand and follow the label instructions. And of course, extension.umn.edu has some great information.
That's right, extension.umn.edu. Listener says, can I take the, quote, white tree plastic tubing off my trees during the summer months?
Yes, in fact, you should take that tubing off. Before you go out there and take it, if possible, just cut it in half so that you have two halves that you just will then duct tape back together again in the fall. That's the best thing. That plastic is really hard and rigid, and it's hard to maneuver it over the tree trunk without damaging the tree trunk. And when you damage the tree trunk, you're setting that tree up for possible implications later on. So I would just cut it and take it off. Now, I would have taken it off in March, perhaps, and then put it on again in the beginning of November before we get some snow.
Okay. A couple of minutes to go on the show. Listener says, I started dinner plate dahlias. They are a foot high. I want to keep them shorter this season. Can I top them to get them to branch out more?
What I would do is I would just pinch back the growing points. What you see coming straight up, just pinch that back, and hopefully then it will branch out a little bit, just like you would for a basil or something like that.
Okay, this listener planted impatiens. Something ate some parts of them. Do you think they'll come back?
As long as there's still some green growing, it should come back. Bunnies love impatience. Deer like impatience, I think, too, and possibly even turkeys. So if you can, do some protecting and figure out what's eating it and then go from there.
All right. Here's another one. I think we have the time. I overwintered a geranium. I've had it outside in the sun for about a month now. It's very green, lots of leaves, but no blooms. What can I do?
Be patient. It will get there. Give it a little fertilizer, a little flowering fertilizer, 10-10-10 or something like that. It'll bloom for you. It just needs a little bit of time. You might think it's really sunny out there, but it's waiting for a little more sun and warmth.
I know we have to run to make way for news and then the Home Improvement Show, Teresa, but a reminder, get to the Arboretum, right? Get there.
Get to the Arboretum. And a quick thank you for everybody who came out to the plant sales. Thank you, Hennepin County and Ramsey. Thank you for supporting us. But
that's
yes,
always,
go to the Arboretum. It's beautiful.
Yeah, and get on the University of Minnesota Extension website. What is that, Teresa?
extension.umn.edu.
Absolutely. Good stuff. Great reading. Teresa, thank you. Enjoy your weekend. Let's talk soon.
We will. Thank you. Have a good weekend.
Master Gardener Teresa Rooney. Stand by for news from CBS and our local news, and then get those home improvement questions ready for Andy Lindis. We expect highs today in the Twin Cities around 75. Could be a rainy Sunday and Monday. We'll fill you in on details in just a moment. Stay with us here on News Talk 830. This is WCCO. And good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. I have the pleasure of introducing Master Gardener Teresa Rooney, answering those lawn and garden questions this morning. Hi, Teresa.
Hello, Denny. Hello, everyone.
A beautiful Saturday morning. It's gorgeous. We expect some showers tomorrow and maybe on Memorial Day as well. We'll talk about that as we move through the hour. But if you have any kind of a lawn and garden question, call it in or text it in. There's just one number to remember for either a phone call or a text, and that number is 651-461-9226. Already we have a bunch of texts coming in, Teresa. Wanted to ask you, our overnight lows were in the, last night, generally speaking, were in the upper 40s. Could that have hurt anything that we planted already?
Probably not. Some of your tropicals, probably, they might not have preferred it, but hopefully they were well watered from all the rain we had, and they should have been all fine. Even tropicals can handle those upper 40s. They don't like it, but they don't get frosted or anything, so we should be okay with everything.
Good news. Looking at a text that says, good morning, I've got some onions planted, and I wanted to mulch them with shredded leaves. That I've done it once before, and it seemed like it hindered the growth of the onions themselves. Now, should I mulch those onions, or should I just leave them be and just keep weeding by hand?
You can mulch them. Just make sure that the mulch is not shading the soil right above where you want that onion bulb to be. So hopefully you planted them far enough apart. So you're going to have like little holes in your mulch, if that makes any sense. Don't mulch right up to the onion stems.
Okay. Let's see. Can you think of a, this is the text now, can you think of a tree genus that we don't plant enough, a tree that we don't value, but perhaps we should? There's an interesting question.
That's a very interesting question. Offhand, I can't think of any. I would think, look at those native trees. Service berries, I think we could always plant more of. But that's just me wanting service berries everywhere in the world. But offhand, I can't think of any. I would suggest people obviously steer away from ash right now and perhaps steer away from the maples. Maybe look at some of the native trees that we have. And the Extension website would have some really good information. So would the DNR website. They would have some really good information that would be particular to your zone.
That's a great point for either one, but especially we always like to mention the university's website, extension.umn.edu. I've learned a lot from that, especially looking for either trees or shrubs or tomatoes or whatever the case may be. We'll mention that from time to time.
And just plan extra time, because once you get in there, you'll suddenly see something, and then
right.
You'll go down that little rabbit hole, and you'll go down that little rabbit hole, and let somebody else cook dinner for you.
There you go. Great idea. Let's take a phone call this morning. I believe Diane is calling in from Minneapolis. Diane, hi. What is your question for Teresa?
Hi, good morning. I'm going to be mulching around some maple trees today, and I wanted to find out if it was safe to put the newspaper under the mulch for weed control or if I would be causing damage to the tree roots.
Diane, that's a really good question, and thank you for asking it. It's fine to put the newspaper down. What I would do is make sure that the topsoil is nice and moist, then put your newspaper down and get that wet also, and then put your mulch on top of that so that you have that nice moist layer, layers going all the way through. Make sure when you mulch a tree that the mulch never touches the trunk of the tree. Maybe pull it back about 6 inches so you have just that little bare area around the tree. And you just want to put down 2-3 inches of mulch would be just fine. You don't want to go a lot deeper than that. Good luck, Diane.
Teresa, looking at this question, simply put, they're talking about eggshells. They were really questioning the value of it, what they read, he or she is reading about that. Let's see, they were looking at a blog by a chemist who said that the calcium in eggshells is the wrong form and cannot be used by plants in the garden. I could see value in deterring slugs, but they are not a problem to me. Can you shed some light? What about eggshells in the garden, generally speaking?
So I'm not 100% sure about the different kinds of calcium. I don't know. I'm not a scientist, so I couldn't speak to that. But our soils have plenty of calcium here in Minnesota. We have plenty of calcium for the plants' needs. Putting crushed eggshells into your garden is not going to hurt anything. It may not help anything so much, but it's not going to hurt. And they take so long to decompose. Now, if you're looking to prevent blossom end rot, your watering practices are more important and your fertilizing practices are more important than adding eggshells or anything else that has calcium into the soil. So if that, look into that. But yeah, it's not going to hurt anything. It's a nice way to just keep the eggshells out of the landfills and put them in there. It adds a little bit of grit to the garden and it should be just fine. But I can't say it's really going to help our plants any.
Very good. Back to the phones we go. Marie, next up here, calling in from Woodbury. Marie, good morning. What is your question?
Good morning. I have a clematis that's at least 10 years old, and the leaves are turning yellow, and some of the leaves from the tip to about halfway are turning brown.
Okay, so what you want to do, Marie, is make sure that your clematis hasn't been broken, the stems or the stems haven't been broken. Lots of times the squirrels running around or chipmunks or even us brushing against those stems can break them because they're very, very brittle. That would be my first guess. If the clematis has not had this before, I wouldn't worry. You probably aren't seeing clematis wilt, but I would keep an eye on it. Check for those broken stems. And you may just want to go to the extension website and look at clematis and look at clematis wilt, W-I-L-T, just to make sure that those aren't the signs you're seeing. It'll talk about how you could maybe do some Bordeaux or something like that, not the wine, but a Bordeaux mix that could help the clematis wilt. That may be one option. I would definitely, though, do some research first on clematis wilt, but I'm thinking something just got damaged in some of these high winds or with squirrels running around or something.
All right. Tell you what, let's grab another phone call before we take a quick break. Dan is calling in from Clear Lake, I believe, this morning. Hi, Dan. What's your question?
Good morning, Denny, Teresa. Happy Memorial Day weekend.
And to you.
Over the last few years, a little fruit or trees planted to include pears, plums, apples, apricots, and cherries. For the following. Number one.
I tell you what, Dan, I'm going to have the ask start all over again. Your phone has been breaking up, so why don't we back up and I'll just say, hey, Dan, what's your question? And you can start all over.
Good morning, Denny. Thank you. Over the last few years, I've kind of planted a fruit orchard with pears, plums, peaches, apples, apricots, and cherries. The following questions are these. When and if should I fertilize? Number one. Number two, is it recommended to spray for insects, and when and if? And then number three, because of the bountiful rainfall we've had, I've had a tremendous blooming on all the trees, and some of the trees are young. Is it ever recommended to take and remove some of the fruit before maturity so as to not damage the trees? Thank you, Denny. Thank you, Teresa.
Thanks, Dan.
Dan, those are absolutely fantastic questions. First of all, fertilizing your trees should be fine in the soil they're in. If you want to top dress with a fertilizer, you can. If your trees are looking happy, which they sound like they are, I wouldn't worry about it. The trees will find their own nutrition in the soil. The roots can head out and find nutrition that way. You don't want to spray for insects unless you know why you're spraying and what you're spraying for. So you first of all have to have a problem with insects, or know that every year you have a problem with a certain insect, and then you look for the tree spray that's going to work for that, and you spray it out according to the label instructions. Read the label and always follow the label. It's the law. And the blooms, yes, you do want to cull some of that fruit. You do want to take some of that fruit off because you don't want the weight of the fruit to break the branches. You also don't want the tree may be able to produce 18 bushels of apples, but they'll all be little. But if you can back that off to 14 bushels or 12 bushels, you'll get bigger, healthier apples, and the tree can actually sustain the weight. And next year, it will still have energy to go into flower and fruit the next year. So, and apples are one of those trees that can easily overproduce one year and not produce the next year. So if you can even out those productions, so yes, you do need to take some of that fruit off. And then again, in June, you will get what's called windfalls, where the fruit just obviously just aborts and falls on the ground. Just clean that up really well. Good luck with your orchard, Dan. It sounds exciting.
Very good. Let's take this quick break. Be right back with more of our Smart Garden Show. If you're just joining us, Master Gardener Teresa Rooney answering those lawn and garden questions this morning here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Stay with us. And good Saturday morning to you on this holiday weekend. Denny Long back with Master Gardener Teresa Rooney on our Smart Garden Show. We are here, by the way, every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, welcoming your lawn and garden questions. Teresa, we have tons of questions, of course, text-wise, and we're going to get back to those. But I believe Jim is hanging on the phone there, calling in from Belle Plaine there this morning. Hi, Jim. Thanks for waiting. What's your question, please? Hello, Jim. I know he's there. I can hear you, Jim. Let's hear your question. Okay. I'll tell you what, Dennis. Jim, maybe he went out for coffee, but we'll check back. But in the meantime, we have so many text questions. Let's get to them.
Okay.
The question, is it too late, this texter says, this season, to transplant a rhubarb plant? And do I cut back the plants and leaves?
If you need to transplant it because you have to move it in for construction or to get more sun, dig up as much of the roots as you can. They're pretty shallow rooted. And just have the hole already dug with some nice organic soil and compost to go back into it. Organic rich soil, and replant it right away at the same depth it was. It may show a little bit of wilt, but then it should come back just fine. Give it a good drink of water. So, yep, go ahead and do that as quickly as you can before the heat sets in.
All right. Another text says this, can I spray weed killer on my thistles that are growing under my pine trees, or will that hurt the pine trees?
It depends. You have to read the label of the weed killer to make sure that it says it can be used under trees, especially under pine trees because they're such shallow rooted trees. So make sure you read it and it says that it can use it over tree roots. There are some chemicals out there that move through the soil and can impact your tree. So you may just want to keep cutting them at ground level till you totally make them use up all their root energy and then die if you don't have the right kind of weed killer. But read the label.
Okay, always read the label.
Always, and you have to follow it. It's the law.
Very good. how to get rid of garlic mustard, which is partnered with a catchweed and taken over a large area. Thank you. They are driving me nuts.
Thank you for wanting to get rid of garlic. Mustard is one of our invasive plants that we do want to get rid of. It is a biennial, and you definitely don't want it to go to seed. So just pull up as much as you possibly can. That's the easiest. And yes, I know it's a big area, but do what you can with it. And if you can't pull up everything, at least pull off all the flowers that you see so it can't go to seed, and then work on it all season long and just, you know, pull up a 5x5 section every weekend or something like that. But don't let it go to seed, otherwise you're really going to be impacting the how much you get the following year. So I would just suggest pulling it up is the easiest thing to do.
Let's go, grab a phone call. Al, I believe, is calling in from Plymouth this morning. Hi, Al. What is your question?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I put 10-10-10 fertilized down in April on all the shrubs, and I'm wondering if I should be doing that again in June or July.
You know, for the most part, Al, your shrubs should be happy with just the one application in the spring. If you notice that something's flagging, something's not doing really well, try to figure out why it's not doing really well. Is it? Do you have like a mulch that's too close to it? Is it not getting too much water, not enough, too much? And if those aren't the issues, then you can just gently maybe top dress with some compost around those shrubs. But once a year should be just fine for the shrubs. They have a big enough root system where they can go out and find their nutrition that they need.
All right. Another texter says this: my birch saplings, the leaves were fine until a few weeks after they opened. Now they have gold, quote, bubbles on them. Is this an insect or a fungus? And can you recommend a product to use? This is near a pond in a marsh.
Okay. What you're looking at probably are a gall, G-A-L-L, and that it is an insect, but there's a little insect that either laid an egg in there and then the insect will hatch and it will fall or fly away. It's not going to hurt your birch trees. Or it could just be that something was feeding there, and it's just like how we get a reaction to a mosquito bite. We sometimes get a little lump there. It's not going to hurt your birch. You should be just fine. Sometimes a few leaves may get so many galls on them that they kind of twist and curl. But if the majority of the leaves look like they're still photosynthesizing and they have galls on them, it's absolutely no problem at all.
Okay. Now let's go back to the phone. I believe Jim in Belle Plaine is ready with a question. Hi, Jim. What is your question?
Good morning. I have two questions, actually. I have a question about alpine columbine. It's a blue flower. It seems to be, acts like a ground cover and wants to take over. And then secondly, my question is, I want to plant an alpine currant bush hedge. And how far apart should I place the plants?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jim, for your questions. I'm not familiar with alpine, the first one that you had, the alpine columbine. I'm not familiar with that one. So I'd have to read up on that one for you. But go to the extension website. Perhaps they have something. I've not heard of that. The alpine currants, they should say on the tags that the plants will get, I think it's 3 to 4 feet wide. So that means you would want to plant them up about 3 to 4 feet apart so that when the two sides came together, they would meet. You could plant them a little bit closer. Alpine currant can sometimes get a powdery mildew if it's too tight. So just make sure it's going to be in full sun and just plant them whatever size it says it gets that wide. Just plant them about that far apart, if that makes any sense to you. And if whatever size it says it gets that wide, just plant them about that far apart, if that makes any sense to you. And eventually they'll grow together. If that seems too, you have teeny tiny plants and that seems too small, you can maybe plant some annuals between them for right now, or maybe even some perennial grasses, and then in 2 or 3 years move the perennial grasses. It'll give you that hedge appearance. It'll just look like every other plant, the alpine currant and grass and alpine currant and grass, but the grass will give you some hedge-like look until that currants can fill in. That would be my best guess for you there, or a suggestion.
Teresa, before we break for weather, let me grab another text question. This listener would like to dig up tulip bulbs. Do I need to leave them in the ground a little longer before digging them out?
Okay, I'm not sure why you're digging them out, but I would leave them in the ground as long as you can to photosynthesize, unless you're going to be planting them immediately somewhere else, and then they can continue photosynthesizing. But if you can leave them in the ground till the leaves start to brown up or yellow, and then move them, that would be the best, so that they get all the energy for next year. So you want, if you want flowers next year, you want them to be as big and healthy as possible. So you want them to get all the energy they can before you move them.
Very good. Let's do this. Let's break and see what this holiday forecast looks like. And then we'll be back with more of our Smart Garden Show here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, Master Gardener Teresa Rooney answering all of those lawn and garden questions this morning. And we always like to mention at this point, Teresa, to get, and what a weekend to get to the Arboretum.
Oh, get to the Arboretum. There's a lot of stuff going on out there. There's a lot of flowers in bloom. Azaleas and alliums, irises, peonies, lupins, lilacs. There's just so much to do, and they have plant walks. So go out to the Arboretum, drive 3 Mile Drive, check out all the mazes and the exciting art that they have out there. There's just, it's a jewel, and we're so lucky to have it here. So, and if you just want to learn about flowers and what they look like when they're growing and how to maybe to arrange them in a garden, you'll get some great ideas from the Arboretum.
Yeah, it's a great, if nothing else, it's a great walk. Just a beautiful walk.
And it's going to be beautiful today, so get out there and enjoy it and just have some fun.
Make reservations online, however. Keep that in mind.
Yep, always and, make a reservation. That means you get good parking, right, Denny?
Absolutely. Makes it very efficient. Get to the Arboretum. All right. Texter says about red buds. I'm not sure what that is. We want an ornamental tree on the southwest corner of our house. Can we keep a red bud small enough if we plant it 8 feet from the house?
You probably could, although they do want to be much bigger, they want to be a 20-foot tree, so that would that you'd have to be pruning it pretty rigorously. I'd also worry that that might be a little too hot for it. Red buds might like a little protection. They don't mind full sun, but that southwest corner is going to get really hot, especially in the winter. The buds may come out too early, and you may not see the red bud. May I suggest something like a service berry or something like that you can prune very easily. It'll give you some flowers in the spring, although they'll be white, not the pink of the red bud. Maybe find a better place for your red bud so you can still enjoy a red bud. But I would probably lean more toward a small service berry than a red bud in that situation.
This next question, if you can answer, I know you can answer that, and if you can find a way, you can retire. Is there any way to deter rabbits other than hardware cloth?
Yes, there are some ways. So you want to think when you have critters that are bothering, maybe instead of just relying on one thing, rely on a few different things. So fencing is the easiest and most efficient way to do it. You can use things like repellents that will act on a fragrance, maybe rotten eggs or garlic or something like that, or a very chemical smell that they just make unpalatable for rabbits. You could use something like that. Understand if you use that, you're going to need to change it up, say, every 2 to 3 to 4 weeks, and you may need to reapply it during that time because of the heat or the rain that we get. You just want to keep the rabbits so that they don't like that area. Be out there more often. If you have a dog, sometimes that helps, although I had a dog who thought rabbits were funny kitties, and he liked the rabbits and wouldn't chase them because he liked his kitty cats. So those are some options that you may try, but usually the physical barriers work the best, and once you can just understand that the physical barrier is there and it's really helping you, maybe you can see in a different light.
I was thinking, so many years ago, 20, 25 years ago, maybe more, we used to do shows with a gentleman by the name of Harold Bailey. He was the Friendly Trapper.
Oh.
And he had all these homegrown solutions to, he would say, like for rabbits don't like bacon grease. and they eat at a 45-degree angle, so go spray your plants with bacon grease.
Oh, I bet the raccoons love those plants then.
That's the trade-off from one critter to another. All right, Teresa, here's another question. Are Japanese beetles mostly in the metro area?
I think you're going to find them concentrated there because we have a lot more lawns that we are grooming, and we have a lot more golf courses and places that we're grooming really well with big swaths of grass. And it's just a wonderful place for them to lay their eggs. And we have all these beautiful ornamental plants, so it's a wonderful place for them to eat. You will find them in other spots, but you'll probably find them more. You won't find them out in the country that much, like in the woods, because that they're just not going to lay their eggs out there, and there's nothing for them really to eat. So I think your caller is, or your person is right, probably more in settled areas.
Okay. This listener, Teresa, says we have a flowering crabapple tree. This year it dropped a lot of leaves, and they're part green and part brown and black. Is this apple rust? And is there anything we can do about it?
It's not apple rust, and my brain just missed what it was. It's hidden in the files in my memory. It's something that a lot of crab apples are susceptible to. I'm having obviously problems this morning. No coffee. So I would go to the extension website, and probably later on in the forecast I'll shout something out because I'll remember what it's called. But go to the extension website and ask what's wrong with my crab apple. Just clean up really well. It's a fungal disease. Just clean up really well. Get those leaves off the ground. And then if you keep seeing it every year, you may need to do a preventative spray. But it's not cedar apple rust. It's something else. And I'll figure it out.
Well, you can just jump in, and we can backtrack if you think of something. It happens. This listener, Teresa, says, I'm working in a flower bed to eliminate creeping bellflower, and It is intermixed with my two dwarf iris. I don't want to harm the iris. What's the best route for me to take in this project?
You know, until you can get what I would do, if you can, just chop it off at ground level in amongst those irises, and then in August, pull those irises all up, dig down, take out the creeping alley bellflower roots that you find, and then replant your irises. That's what I would do, especially in that area. The rest of the area, you can, if you want to, you know, pull it up, dig it up. Those roots go way down. They have big, huge reservoirs of carbohydrates in their stores, and so they'll just keep coming back. I can't dig up my whole yard, so I just keep pulling it as I see it, knowing that I am not destroying the plant, but I'm hoping just to weaken its reserves enough so it finally just gives up and dies.
Speaking of irises, this question is, why don't my irises bloom? The plants are healthy and get good water and sun.
I was going to say the sun would be the best. Make sure that they're not too crowded. When irises or daylilies get too crowded, they tend to stop blooming. So maybe in August, lift up those irises and spread them apart to take away any of the bad stuff, and make sure the daughters or the corms are facing outward, so that they're moving away from each other as they grow, and you won't have to pull them and redo them every few years. That would be easiest. But I'm thinking they're probably just tight in there then.
Okay. This listener wants to know if you have any ideas on how to get rid of snow on the mountain. It's so invasive.
It is invasive. Again, I would pull it and dig it where you can. If you must resort to a chemical, just make sure that it is an herbicide that will take out snow on the mountain, and be careful when you're spraying it, because that herbicide will also kill things like your... It is an herbicide that will take out snow on the mountain, and be careful when you're spraying it, because that herbicide will also kill things like your roses or any of your ornamental flowers or anything like that. But for all of these weeds, pulling it and just being really persistent and maybe mulching the area will slow it down from coming back, and just keep pulling it and or pull and dig to remove as much as you can, and just be really cognizant that it may come back from the little bits of roots that you have left in the ground.
Okay. A couple of questions actually this morning about, can you speak to the viburnum leaf beetle treatment? I don't see anything on the extension website. And actually, we've had a couple of questions about that particular issue. Any answers?
I don't have any answers. I don't have any answers. I it's in the back of my mind that I need to research it, and obviously I should have brought it a little forward and researched it a little bit earlier. I know it can be getting to be a problem, but again, for a lot of these things, unless it's defoliating your whole plants, it's usually not a big problem. But you can look, as you said, the extension website doesn't have any information. But they will eventually on that, I'm sure. But I just haven't researched it yet, so I can't give you any good information. I'm really sorry about that.
Can I plant tulip bulbs now? Listener wants to know.
Well, you can. You're not going to find them in the store. And if you're thinking that you've got a beautiful container with forced tulips and you want to put those bulbs in the ground, you can go ahead and put them in the ground. They probably won't do anything. They will probably die because they didn't get enough photosynthesizing and they were forced, so they were stressed and they may not come back for you. But, I mean, it's better than trying to hold them over till fall when you need to plant them. So I would try to get them in the ground as fast as you can. Understand it's not guaranteed much of a success for you.
Okay. We need to take a quick break.
Okay.
So hang on. Master Gardener Teresa Runa answering lawn and garden questions for you this hour. Coming along next hour, right after the 9 o'clock news break, Andy Lindis will be fielding any kind of a home improvement question you might ask. That's next hour here on News Talk 830 WCCO. And a good Saturday morning to you on this holiday weekend. Denny Long back with Master Gardener Teresa Runa on this Smart Garden Show.
Denny,
Teresa,
I have some information. Okay.
I'm ready.
Apple scab is what I was thinking of for the crab apple. So it's apple scab is why your plant is dropping its leaves. So research apple scab on the website. And then the leaf beetles, the Wisconsin University of Madison has a good article on leaf beetles. So viburnum leaf beetles, Wisconsin, and you should be able to find it really good. And it tells you how to take care of it and what you can see.
Very good. Thanks for doing
it's
a little homework there.
It's too late to treat it right now.
Too late.
I think so.
All right, let's see. Thanks for that, Teresa. Let's see how many folks we're going to help up before you take your leave. This listener wants to move several large June hostas to the north side of the house, which has more shade and where ground stays damp longer. Will the hostas thrive there is the question.
They might. If the ground is a heavy clay, I would plant them a little bit higher. If it stays moist a long time, definitely plant them a little bit higher. You don't want them to get crown rot. Go ahead, move them as quickly as you can. They'll look a little tattered this year, but they'll recover, and once they start growing again, they'll be just beautiful.
Here's a question we used to get every show, but haven't for a while. Is there any way to get rid of Creeping Charlie from my lawn?
I have been, I'd get off the, and I'd be crying. Nobody asked about Creeping Charlie. It was terrible. But, yep, Creeping Charlie, pull it, keep pulling it, raking it out of your beds, and then just be really vigilant about it. Definitely don't let it go to seed if it's in an area where you're okay with it growing. As soon as those flowers start to fade, cut them off, mow it. That's the easiest way. There are chemicals you can use. You will have to do them in the spring and the fall. You may have some repeat applications. Fall would be the best time to use those chemicals on Creeping Charlie. Late summer, early fall is what I'm talking about, but read and understand and follow the label instructions. And of course, extension.umn.edu has some great information.
That's right, extension.umn.edu. Listener says, can I take the, quote, white tree plastic tubing off my trees during the summer months?
Yes, in fact, you should take that tubing off. Before you go out there and take it, if possible, just cut it in half so that you have two halves that you just will then duct tape back together again in the fall. That's the best thing. That plastic is really hard and rigid, and it's hard to maneuver it over the tree trunk without damaging the tree trunk. And when you damage the tree trunk, you're setting that tree up for possible implications later on. So I would just cut it and take it off. Now, I would have taken it off in March, perhaps, and then put it on again in the beginning of November before we get some snow.
Okay. couple of minutes ago on the show. Listener says, I started dinner plate dahlias. They are a foot high. I want to keep them shorter this season. Can I top them to get them to branch out more?
What I would do is I would just pinch back the growing points. What you see coming straight up, just pinch that back, and hopefully then it will branch out a little bit, just like you would for a basil or something like that.
Okay, this listener planted impatiens. Something ate some parts of them. Do you think they'll come back?
As long as there's still some green growing, it should come back. Bunnies love impatiens. Deer like impatiens, I think, too, and possibly even turkeys. So if you can, do some protecting and figure out what's eating it and then go from there.
All right. Here's another one. I think we have the time. I overwintered a geranium. I've had it outside in the sun for about a month now. It's very green, lots of leaves, but no blooms. What can I do?
Be patient. It will get there. Give it a little fertilizer, a little flowering fertilizer, 10-10-10 or something like that. It'll bloom for you. It just needs a little bit of time. You might think it's really sunny out there, but it's waiting for a little more sun and warmth.
I know we have to run to make way for news and then the Home Improvement Show, Teresa, but a reminder, get to the Arboretum, right? Get there.
Get to the Arboretum. And a quick thank you for everybody who came out to the plant sales. Thank you. Hennepin County and Ramsey. Thank you for supporting us. But
that's
yes,
always,
go to the Arboretum. It's beautiful.
Yeah. And get on the University of Minnesota Extension website. What is that, Teresa?
Extension.umn.edu.
Absolutely. Good stuff. Great reading. Teresa, thank you. Enjoy your weekend. Let's talk soon.
We will. Thank you. Have a good weekend.
Master Gardener Teresa Rooney. Stand by for news from CBS and our local news, and then get those home improvement questions ready for Andy Lindis. We expect highs today in the Twin Cities around 75. Could be a rainy Sunday and Monday. We'll fill you in on details in just a moment. Stay with us here on News Talk 830. This is WCCO.